This episode of the Clean Comedy Podcast is brought to you by Alive Show App. The Alive Show App is a live stream stand-up comedy open mic of your dreams. Built by comedians for comedians with live audience audio, mics every day, and performers can add themselves to any set list. Visit aliveshowapp.com for details and app store links.
You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
This episode of the Clean Comedy Podcast is sponsored by Podcorn. Podcorn is a marketplace that connects podcasters to amazing podcast sponsorship opportunities. With Podcorn, there's no middleman. Podcasters of all sizes can browse and choose opportunities right on the platform, setting their own rates and collaborating directly with brands. Podcorn is the marketplace for podcasters to connect with advertisers and fund their podcast. So don't go another episode without a sponsor. Click the link in the show notes and sign up for Podcorn to start browsing sponsorship opportunities today. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. I am James, and today I'm with my co-host, Mr. Luke LaCoy.
Hoi hoi.
You look all commando. You look like your G.I. Joe Luke. Your G.I. Luke.
Yeah, I'm trying out looking like military this week instead of a pilot. So
that's a good one.
Yep.
And this has been a good week for us. We've gotten bigger numbers. Everything's growing on the podcast. I just added a Venmo to the YouTube, so there's a link so people can donate to the podcast, because I know some people mentioned they might want to donate. So if you want to donate, you go to about in the on YouTube, and you can go there, and there's my Venmo. I'll also put the Venmo in the show notes so you can go look at that too. It's really just my name, James D. Creviston. That makes it easy. I had it as something else before. I had it as comedypreneur, but most people can't spell comedypreneur. So it's like that was going to mess it up for everyone. So I was like, all right, I better not do that. So if you guys remember, we had a person reach out to us on YouTube and they had a question for us, and they had a lot of questions, and it was really awesome to answer that. And afterwards, they replied on YouTube again, but they sent an email first. I did reply to the email because I told Luke, okay, we'll do another Q&A type thing on this. Well, then he basically copied his whole email to YouTube. So if you guys go on YouTube and go look at that in the video, you'll see that comment in the video for Out of the Darkness. That's the thing. Now, just so you know, his name is not the darkness in real life. His name is Dwayne. So Dwayne, I hope that you don't mind us using your name. He's a cool guy. And so he actually has four more questions for us. So we're going to do questions one at a time, and we'll both give responses, and then we'll go from there. And this is great because I don't know about you, but I love answering questions. Like it might be one of my favorite things. Yeah.
It's all right. It's all right.
I do. I like them because I feel like not only are we helping Dwayne, right? Not only are we helping him, but we also might be helping somebody who has a similar question in the vein that maybe we've overlooked, we haven't thought of, because we've done this for so long. Mm-hmm. So here's question number one. You ready for question number one? And you're going to answer it first. So here we go.
Okay.
In comedy, there appears to me that there is a relatively simple starting path: write jokes and perform them in front of an audience. Comedy seems to be the only entertainment form that requires the least amount of skill development to enter into. I apologize for this, but I'm not trying to be rude. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I mean, I think the only other thing would be like improv or music. Well, okay. No.
You have to learn before that, yeah.
Yeah, I would say like improv, because you could just jump into it.
Literally are supposed to jump into improv, right? Like you're just supposed mm-hmm. to like jump in. I've actually never done improv, so that's not going to help you. I think this might be under complicating, like simplifying things a little too much. Because yes, there is a simple path: write jokes, get on stage and tell those jokes, right? And then you get feedback. However, here's the problem. Writing a joke is not easy. It's not a simple thing. Too many people get on stage, especially at open mics, and just talk about their day or just talk about something they find funny or tell you one of those you had to be there stories that they think you're going to laugh at because they're telling you about their friend Bob, and Bob is crazy. You don't know why he's crazy. You just know that they tell you he's crazy and he does crazy things. And then you're supposed to find it funny. And he's laughing at it because he knows Bob and he knows the crazy things, but he's not telling us anything. So yes and no, I agree. There's a low barrier to entry because anyone can go to an open mic, right? You don't have to invest any money in this. You don't have to invest any skill as far as like learning a musical instrument, but you do have to invest time into learning to write a joke. Otherwise you're never going to be successful. Would you agree with that?
Yes, but if you wanted to like test out comedy, you can just sign up for open mic and do it.
Yes.
Like, you know,
that's true. I mean,
nothing,
yes.
Nothing wrong with that.
I agree. We've all been to those open mics where literally no one knows how to write a joke. And you're like, come on, guys. At least learn to write a joke.
And then, you know, there's cool things now like a live show app where you can, you know, well, what's neat is you can watch first. Yeah. So get a feel for it. And then if you think that's a good way to start or try, then sign up and do it.
I think a live show app is probably the best way to go about it because it's not a huge amount of investment. And if you hate it, you can delete the app off your phone, right? You never have to do it again. No big deal, right? No loss. But it gives you a good starting point because, yeah, you can go be a spectator for a while and nobody has to see you. And then you can go ahead and sign up and do the show. So I agree. That's a smart thing. I would, you know, the thing is, I want to invest in that app. I really do. I want to invest in helping that grow. So, you know, hopefully Forrest will get back to me and I can figure out how to help with that. All right. Next question. These are like question/statements, I guess. So here we go. All right. Stand-up comedians tend to search out for acting, improv, writing, etc. after a certain amount of time has passed. From what I've read and heard, they do this to either add another dimension to their stand-up or correct certain behaviors or skills. Yes, I would agree with that. I agree that a lot of comedians, after they've gotten a decent amount of skill at stand-up, not the 10,000 hours, they haven't mastered it per se, they do go do something else. Now, I would say that stand-up comedians should already be writing before they're doing stand-up, or at least in conjunction with doing stand-up, but I don't think it's a either or type thing for writing. Everything else I would agree with, right? I would say, yeah, we probably do take acting, or we probably should take improv, or maybe we take sketch writing or screenwriting or some other kind of writing, but basic like joke writing, we should already kind of have not mastered per se, but have already have a decent amateur skill level at it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I was a writer first before I started stand up. So, okay. You know, just kind of creative stuff, but it helps. I mean, all of those things help. And there's no like set path. Like you have to do one before the other. They all can work in conjunction with each other. And, but yeah, that's good bringing those up. Cause they all, you know, they benefit in different ways.
Yeah. And I would say an acting or improv acting helps you work on reactions or, act outs or whatever. Improv lets you play at the moment, so if something happens you can play to it easier. So there are some things, and there are a lot of comedians that one don't do act outs very well, so maybe they could benefit from acting class, and two don't respond to in the moment very well. They kind of freeze up, or they just kind of move on and like gloss over something that could have been a great laugh for them, right? Just because they're so you're stuck in your head doing your material, like I've got to do my material, I've got to do my stuff, I only have this much time, I've got to, so they overlook that stuff.
I think it would be the hardest to be an actor without having done improv and stand up.
What do you mean?
To me, that's like just memorizing lines and like not knowing how to deliver. And if something like weird happens in the scene, not knowing how to like react to it. And to me, that would be like, I don't know if there's actors listening, but, yeah, to me, that just seems like a real hard way to do it. Just like memorize lines and, you know, that's it.
I'll tell you this. I did take acting classes for about a year or so before I ever did stand up. It was way before that. I wanted to do some acting and do, I really wanted to do like more like background acting and like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't really want to be like look at me. I'm not a lead actor. Sorry guys. I'm just not. But I wanted to be able to have that skill. And so I did take acting classes, and they do go through a lot of like emotional movements and what do you feel in this scene and like that kind of stuff. So they do kind of like coach you through those things and like, this is what the scene's supposed to be. But then they also will do things like, okay, this scene normally is a played as a straight scene. So it's, you know, you're played as it's dark and maybe you're dramatic or whatever. Now try it in a comedic tone and let's see how it goes. Or try it, you know, scared, or try it crying, or try, you know, and they would do all these different things. And it was that I thought was fun. And it does help you work on different scenarios. And so, you know, I think acting is beneficial too. But I do think that if you go from a person who's so used to reading a script and acting off of written lines to trying to do stand-up without understanding that the two are not the same, you're going to have a very difficult time. I've seen people who are like, oh, I'm an actor. My agent or my manager said I should try stand-up. And they're just terrible at it because they're used to being told how to do something. And no one in stand-up is going to tell you how to do it, unfortunately. Yeah. That's the sad part. All right. The next one, having more skills makes it easier to be more creative with one's work by offering a palette of skills to choose from. I love that, by the way. That's great writing. For example, acting and writing to create a persona or characters, improv to be more present with the audience, presentation and acting to learn how to connect body language, speech, presentation to learn about voice, tone, and pacing. I agree. All those things, like we talked about, the more that you have, the more you can use, the more you can do. Like Luke's done improv. He also plays a guitar. So not only can he just do regular stand-up, he can make songs up. He can also do some improv things. And like, is the washing machine? Is that the bit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very much like an improv acting type of thing, and it's a fantastic bit, right? So, I love it. That's like the best. And so, would you agree though? Like, you need to have those things.
Well, yeah, and the washing machine kind of like that whole bit was done as an act out originally and just kind of improvising it in the first place. And then, you know, later then it was honed in and, you know, rewritten and all that. But, and I think a lot of that happens in stand-up. Like, you know, you get an idea, maybe it's not fleshed out yet, but you try it somewhere and you get some reaction. And then from there you can, use these like tools that you have available to kind of sculpt it.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that's how my Navy bit started and stuff. It like was a little bit here and there, and then it kind of just went together. Now it's like one of my strongest bits, but it has act outs. It has movement. It does have an improv moment in the beginning of it where I'm interacting with the audience. There's all these different things part of it, and it works really well, I think. All right, I know I'm going to butcher Jared's name. You always know it. All right, you say it.
Jared Voyer.
Jared Voyer.
Volley.
I know. He hates me for that. All right. He stated that comedians need to be able to distance themselves from their comedy in order to determine what works and what does not. Would a larger skill set help one to not only distance themselves and allow for greater objectivity, but also allow for better analysis to determine why something didn't work? Also, would it prevent comedians from beating themselves up because they bombed and look at why the jokes did or did not work? It's hard to distance yourself from your set because most stand-up comedians write personal stuff. So the things that you write about are things you've experienced, things that you've lived through, things that you've dealt with, things that affect you, that upset you, that, you know, all kinds of things. So it's very hard to be objective and distance yourself that way. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't analyze why you did wrong, why you bombed, or why a joke worked. What you should be analyzing, why you did bad and also why you did good. Both of those things will make you a better comedian. If you only focus on every time you bomb, I promise you, you're only going to continue to bomb because now it's going to be in your head. You're going to be inside your own head. You're going to be messing with yourself all the time. And you're always going to think, oh, I'm going to bomb again. I'm going to bomb again. That joke didn't work last time. I'm going to bomb again. But if you go after every set, this is why we say always record every single one of your sets. Always listen to it on. I record my set. Listen to it on my drive home after the club, right? And then I go, man, you know what I did? I paused too long there, or I rushed through that, or I stepped on the laughs there, or whatever it is, whatever the thing is, that's what I deal with. So you can't necessarily distance yourself and be too unobjective, for like lack of a better term. you always have to analyze it, and you always have to do it. And unfortunately, you're always going to beat yourself up when you have a bad night. It doesn't matter who you are. Every comedian is going to beat themselves up when they bombed or they had a joke that didn't work, especially if that joke's been working and then it doesn't work. You're going to be like, what did I do wrong? What is wrong with me? What happened? I suck at comedy. Why am I doing this? Like, literally, you'll go down the entire rabbit hole to the point where, like, by the time you make it home, you're like, you know what? I'm never going to do comedy again. Forget it. I'm quitting. Everyone hates me. No one thinks I'm funny. You know, like, you will literally talk yourself out of doing stand-up ever again. And then another show will come and you'll go do it. But that's how comedians work, unfortunately. Luke?
Yeah, I mean, it's... One thing I keep in mind is, like, when I used to have, like, bad nights and, like, really bad nights, I kind of realized that the focus of the whole show and stuff was myself. And when I'm focusing more on the audience and making sure they're having a good time, then I'm not so hard on myself at the end of the day. Because, you know, I'm there to entertain and, you know, have some laughs. And it's a matter of, like, being serious, or because, you know, it is serious. It feels serious when you go in front of you know, big group of strangers. Feels 100% serious. But if you come at it with, like, okay, this is going to be fun, we're just going to joke around, these are all my friends, it kind of lessens the effect if it doesn't go that well overall as a show. And yeah, I don't know if there's a way to distance yourself from your jokes or not. I mean, you know, you wrote them, so you're invested in them. So yeah, that's a hard one. Yeah, it's just the mindset going into it.
Yeah, you just really have to realize that you almost have to look at stand-up as like playing a sport. So if you've you've ever played a sport in your life, right, you may have practiced all week, you may have been ready, you may have done everything you need to do, and then you get out on the field, and let's take baseball, somebody hits it bounces in the wrong spot on the field and you completely miss it. It's not because you suck at baseball, it's not because you're a bad catcher, it just, there was a bad hop, you missed it, sorry. That's just how it goes. Or, you know, that guy swung 1 second before the catcher grabbed the ball, and so he got a little more of the ball than you know, you thought he should have, or he even thought he should have, and now he hit a home run. Like, there's so many things you can't calculate for. You don't know who's in the audience that day. You don't know what their mentality is that day. You don't know what happened 5 seconds before, 5 minutes before, 5 hours before, 5 days before. You have no idea. Right. So what you're doing, you can only control the parts that you can control, which is writing your jokes, doing your set the best that you can. And then just being aware, being in the moment too. The other thing that comedians do, and I think this is where he's going with this, is we get inside of our own head while we're on stage. Mm-hmm. We're there, but I don't know if anyone's ever, I don't know what this is called. The thing where, like, you watch yourself do something, like you're watching yourself like it's a movie. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's called. I don't know if there's a name for that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the name is either, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So it's like you're watching yourself do something, and you're like, what are you doing? Why are you doing? Like, comedians do that. Like, and a lot of actors and people say that they've had that, like, almost out-of-body experience where you're watching yourself doing something and you're just cringing, like, oh my gosh, why did I say it like that? Why did I do it? Comedians do that all the time. This is the hardest art form. It's the only art form with immediate feedback. Either people laugh because it's funny, or they don't laugh because it's not, right?
Yep. Yeah, and also, too, like, even if it sometimes it may seem like it's the crowd who's, like, not amped up, but it could be like even a small set of nerves when you're on stage can ruin your set in a big way. And like, you wouldn't know that unless you watch your set back or listen to it. And then like, kind of like, oh yeah, my voice sounds weird in those parts. It's not sounding like it usually does. So there's a lot of different factors too that can influence how the set goes. Cause it's generally not the audience. Generally the audience is there to have a good time. So, but once in a while, you know, there's just a hard to please audience. But yeah.
So here's a couple other things. Is frankly, I'm scared to stand up in front of a bunch of strangers and bomb. I'm trying to stall this as long as possible. Well, welcome to stand-up comedy, because that's exactly what it is. Especially at open mics. Guess what? Most other comedians are not invested in you at an open mic. They're not listening to you. They could care less. You will feel like you're bombing at an open mic, even if your stuff is very funny. That's the one bad part about stand-up comedy is there's not real feedback at open mic. You go to open mics, so you get comfortable getting up on stage in front of strangers, especially strangers who 9 times out of 10 aren't going to respond to you unless you play to the back of the room. And usually comedians who play to other comedians aren't great comedians for real crowds. Sorry, guys. I know making your comedian friends laugh is awesome, but you're also the comedian that complains and goes, man, that crowd sucked. Yes, because they don't want to hear your fart jokes. They don't want to hear you talk about your Tinder dates. They've heard everybody talk about that. You know, everybody else has a better bit. You're just, no one wants to hear you rant about your girlfriend. No one wants to hear you rant about your job. No one wants to hear you say the same stupid line over and over again. These are things that other comedians laugh at because it's funny to see you do stupid stuff because we like that, right? That's what we like. But real crowds want real stuff. So that's, don't stall. Honestly, if I could give you one thing to do, go to your closest open mic if one's open or available to you, or get on the live show app and just write like 3 jokes, do them and bail. Don't just make sure you record it. Make sure you have a way to record it, but do it and bail. 3 jokes. And then guess what? Next week, do those 3 jokes again. And next week, do those 3 jokes again and do it for like, you know, a couple weeks or at least 5 times. And then after that, your nerves will kind of wear down because you know what to expect, right? If it's open mic, you know that these guys aren't going to listen, or maybe they think that joke's funny, or maybe they all turn their back on you and walk to the back of the room. I mean, who knows? But you've got over the fear of getting on stage and talking in front of people, you know?
I would add a slight variation. All right. Do your 3 jokes and then bomb. Bomb really hard. Just so you know, get it out of the way right away. And
no, you will bomb. You will bomb. No. You don't even have to try. You will bomb. Like, you may, if you're the comedian who killed the first time you got up, probably the third time you got up, it was terrible because you have this unearned confidence that every comedian gets, right? Every comedian gets it when they've killed and they're like, yeah, I'm the best. I'm the next blah, blah, whatever your favorite comedian is, because we're all imitating somebody at the beginning. You know, I'm the best. I'm the next George Carlin. And then two more times later, You eat it. It might even be the same jokes, the same way you told them before, all the same stuff. You're going to eat it. You're going to bomb. You're going to be like, you're going to leave and go, what did I do? I hate myself. You know, it's going to be that. Watch.
But I mean, like, as soon as you start feeling that and what it feels like, then you can adjust and react to it appropriately. Because, like, you know, I mean, that happens to us. We can start hot, start losing the crowd in the middle. And it may start feeling like a bomb, but, you know, it's like a reflex then. And like, okay, the crowd is losing focus. How am I going to get out of this quickly and turn it back around? And it's just, you know, getting comfortable with that feeling will be huge. And to know what that feeling feels like. So, yeah, just do it.
be comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's what stand-up comedy is. Being comfortable with being uncomfortable. He also talks about storytelling techniques and stuff like that, and kind of doing those things. But he's also wondering if oral storytelling techniques and being vulnerable in front of an audience is helpful. That is all stand-up comedy is being vulnerable in front of a bunch of people and telling your jokes, which are supposed to be usually antidotes of yourself. Now, there are people like, I love Rodney Dangerfield, right? But he made up stories, right? They weren't real. They were a perception of a real thing, like a real feeling he had, but they were like, you know, exacerbated and not realistic. But he had a character. So his character, that was his reality for the character, because his name wasn't really Rodney Dangerfield, but that's what he did. So stuff like that, you're being vulnerable. And he's even when he was Rodney Dangerfield, he was being vulnerable at being Rodney Dangerfield, telling people he gets no respect, that his wife, you know, sleeps with everybody else. And, you know, all these other things, his kids hate him and the dog will, you know, always bites him, or just like whatever it was, he would do that. And so that's what you have to do. I think the big thing is you're fearful of failure, and that's just being human. All humans are afraid of failure. Every single one of us. Do you know why people who get famous hang on to that fame and do everything they possibly can to keep it, because they don't want to fail. They don't want to be like the rest of us afterwards. They don't want that feeling to end, because it's scary, because the amount of people that become famous, the amount of people that are rich and famous or whatever, it's not a lot. It's not a lot of people. It's 1% of the population. So they don't want to be like the other 99% of us who work a 9-to-5, go into a cubicle every day, have to deal with a cruddy boss, have to deal with the drive to and from work, have to, you know, budget everything. Like, they don't want to do that. So, I mean, sorry, that there's a real fear of failure. And everyone has that. Even when you go to work, I know, like me, go to my work, I don't want to fail at work. I don't want my boss to think that I'm a terrible worker. Now, at the same time, there's times where I'm like, I hate this job. I cannot wait for this day to be over. Screw my boss. You know, like that's a real feeling that everybody has too. But yeah, you don't want to fail at it. If your boss even if you hated your job, but your boss came and fired you, you would still be upset, right? For a minute. Like, even if you hated that job, even if every day you go to that job and you think, today's the day I'm going to quit. Today's the day I'm going to give that dude the finger and be like, forget you, I'm out of here. But he comes and fires you first. For one moment, you're going to feel like a failure. Even if you hated that job, you're going to feel like a failure. Now, it might be one moment, might be 1 hour, might be 1 week, might be one day, who knows? But you're going to feel that moment of failure, even if you always wanted to not do that. Like, if you hated that job every single day. Am I wrong?
No. I was like, when I was at work, I would be like, am I going to get fired today? Am I going to get fired today? That kept going through my head.
Yeah. And even if you hated that job and you wanted to quit, the fear of failure, of getting fired, scares you. And that's just human nature. No one wants to feel like a failure. That's why that feeling's uncomfortable, because it's a motivator to get you to not feel that way. Have you ever met the person who, like, is always a failure and they've just now become numb to it, and they, like, think that, like, that's normal? You're like, whoa, that's I never want to be that person. Like, mm-hmm. I met those people. They just constantly fail at everything, and now they're just numb to it. They're like, yeah, you know, whatever, things don't work out. And you're like, how are you living? Like, why are you doing that? Welcome to stand-up comedy, where everyone is scared of failure, but everybody's a failure. I mean, that's literally what it is. For the first, you know, year or two, you're open mics, doing some small shows, trying to grow. It's all about perseverance. There's the biggest thing in comedy, I think Jared even said this, is just, it's doing it. It's persevering. Mm-hmm. It's just getting a little bit better every day. Those incremental changes, those incremental growths, then you're going to be a stand-up comedian. And the people that make it are not always the people who are the funniest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're just the people who kept grinding it out.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Yep, I agree.
Sorry. That's the truth, guys. There's not a secret formula to stand up, because we all know that there's a million different types of comedians, but the people who grind it out and keep doing it day in and day out and show up even when, you know, they've bombed for the last 10 shows in a row, those are the people that are going to make it, because they're going to keep going. And eventually all the people they started with 5-10 years down the road won't be doing stand-up anymore. They'll be back at whatever their job was and, you know, being like, oh yeah, I did stand-up one time. Yeah, I did stand-up before. What? That's it. That's all they're going to ever have. It's like the guy who's like peaked in high school. He's like, yeah, I played football in high school. And you're like, yeah, well, you're 58. Like, time to let it go. You know, like, sorry. So that's that. Just keep doing it. Get on stage as soon as possible. Write jokes. Learn more. You're already on the path of learning. Anybody who's listening to this, anybody who's trying, dude, you're doing it. You're doing it. Now get on stage and do it, you know, or get the app and do it, because that's what's going to take right now. So,
yeah. And Mr. Darkness, when you do, send us that recording.
Yeah, no, he said he would. He said he would do it. But he said it took him nearly 30 years to believe in himself. So I'm guessing he's in his 30s, maybe 40s. Guess what? Rodney Dangerfield was in his 40s when he got famous. He quit comedy in like his 20s, went and sold aluminum siding and did stuff, and then came back and did stand-up and then got famous. Dude, it doesn't matter how old you are. Sorry, it doesn't. I mean, there's tons of people who got famous later on in life. Don Rickles, right? mm-hmm. even though he got famous, he was older. He was like in his 30s because he had went to the military. He'd done some of the stuff. And then he got famous and was doing stand-up and insult comedy. And then he got hooked up with Sinatra and those guys. And then he started being big in Vegas. And boom. But it takes time. And there's no... The 18-year-old who starts comedy and the 30-year-old who starts comedy, guess what the difference is? The 30-year-old has more stuff to talk about mm-hmm. because he started later. I'm sorry. Sorry, 18-year-old. All your stuff is going to be from high school and what you're doing right now. The 30-year-old has lived a lot of life. He's got a lot of stuff to pull from. Sorry. So, all right. Thank you guys so much for joining us. If you have questions, feel free to email them. Dwayne, we appreciate it. This is awesome because we can talk about a lot of comedy stuff, and it's uncomfortable for everybody. And just know that's what stand-up comedy is about. Right?
Yep. Being uncomfortable and all the time.
It is. All right, Luke, where can people find you at?
Luke LaCoy on the Google machine.
On the Google machine. All right. James D. Crevison at jamesdcrevison.com, comedypreneur.com. Also, please, if you really like the show, if you want to support us, please, first of all, subscribe on YouTube. We could use the subscriptions. We want to get to 1,000 subscribers so we can have our watch hours so we can grow and monetize it and be able to bring more stuff. I'm resisting doing a Patreon. I don't want to do that. I like it. I think it's a cool idea, but I feel like everybody doesn't need another subscription. But also, please, if you feel like, hey, I don't want you to do a Patreon either, but I like you guys and you feel there's value for our content, Venmo, just Venmo us $1. I don't care. $1. Just send $1 and say, hey, guys, thanks for episode whatever. You know, just do that. Let us know. Venmo James D. Creviston. It'll be in the show notes. Venmo us. You know, it helps. It'll help buy Luke another drink. It'll help me buy another Liquid Death, like whatever, and we can keep this going. I really pay for the hosting fees, really more than anything. But
yeah.
But thank you again so much for listening. Thank you. Please like, subscribe, and have a great week. Bye.